Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:55 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is May 18th. Thought I'd kick off with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It's down 1,200 points. So that has completely unwound the advance yesterday, the day before that, and the day before that, and it is closing at a new low. It's a new closing low. So we were looking at the possibility of a reversionary rally, and this massive downward dynamic suggests that that reversionary rally is over. So that didn't last very long, and it's in direct response to Jay Powell's statements yesterday to the effect that until the Federal Reserve sees evidence that inflation is coming back down towards 2%, they're going to keep tightening. And there was a muted response to that initially yesterday, but then people woke up to the fact that we're still in this chicken and egg scenario, that if interest rates rise, then it's going to put pressure on stocks. When stock investors even have a modicum of hope that interest rate hikes aren't going to last, then they start buying stocks, and that increases the potential that interest rates are going to be hiked again. So this is getting successively knocked down. Every hope that there's going to be a rebound is being knocked back. Now, we're still in a situation where valuations have improved, where cash holdings are high, and also where there's a lot of hedging activity has taken place. So we've had deleveraging and then releveraging. People are protecting their positions, are the size of their portfolios on the short side by hedging. But this isn't creating demand. And then when we think about the NASDAQ, well, it's also pulling back and doing so in a rather sharp manner. And holdouts like Apple are also now unwinding the very short-term bounce. So the NASDAQ is right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And it hasn't quite tested it yet, but it looks increasingly likely that it will. And then we can think about Bitcoin, because it hasn't quite yet been able to push back above the 30,000 level. And it was down another $700 in here today, but it was down over 1,000 earlier on. Now, it has bounced from that 1,000-day moving average. But so far, the bounce has been pretty muted. There are lots of supporting arguments for cryptocurrencies, that they're the future of the financial sector, that they're going to, they don't require trust. So anybody can trade with anybody and you don't need an intermediary. And all of these types of promises, they hold lots of potential. But the potential from a market is divorced from its price, particularly in a manic situation. And the one thing that I find rather interesting is when I listen to people, particularly on the radio, talking about their Bitcoin holdings, they tend to adopt a philosophical attitude that, yes, yeah, you have to learn to deal with volatility. And everybody who's been party to the cryptocurrency market for the last 14 years has learned to live with volatility. And it's not at all unusual to see 50% declines. Now, of course, there are other instances where things fall by a lot more than that. And then, of course, we have the clear differentiation between the core of Bitcoin and the periphery of the altcoins. So Ethereum was down another $70 in here today. And it was at 5,000 at the end of last year, and we're below 2,000 now. So this is a more than halving. It's already a very substantial decline, and there's no sign yet that it's over. The one challenge for the promise of Bitcoin is that the price tends to be a barometer for liquidity. And this is problematic because we're moving into more of a restrictive money environment. And high yield spreads are still marching higher. So if we then think about the price and the high yield bonds, well, they are breaking down again. So this is very meaningful. When we think about bond yields overall, well, the 10-year yield in the USA It's looking increasingly likely that it has peaked, at least in the short term. Now, we are at a very deep oversold condition, so there is ample potential for yields to come back down. And it completely unwound the pop on the upside yesterday. But it will have to start stringing together days on the downside in order to clearly break the trend. And it's still arguable whether a midpoint danger line stop would have been triggered. If it can pull back below the 2.8% level, then that would be a clear break of trend, and it would greatly enhance the scope for a reversionary move towards the 200-day moving average at a minimum. If we think about the pressures that are coming to bear on the global economy, well, on the one hand, I have a lot of sympathy with the view that there's too much demand in the market. And I simply look at my own life and think about it as just a microcosm of what's going on in the global economy. So my family have spent a lot of money this year renovating the house. Now, some of it was completely necessary, some of it was discretionary. And then we also bought a new car. But what I thought was also interesting is that our club, that they have now doubled the membership. So going from $40,000 to $90,000 was an awfully big jump for a tennis membership. And then they wrote to me yesterday and they said, well, if you want to be an affiliate golf member, we can take the membership up front. That'll lock in your rate now, and you'll only have to pay an extra $94,000 plus tax to lock in your golf membership. And then when a golf membership becomes open, perhaps in 2 years' time, then you'll just automatically slot into that. And in the meantime, you can play during the week and you can have access to the driving range. And I only signed up for the golf membership just to put my name down. And I don't play golf really habitually, and I don't really have time for it either. But what I found particularly interesting was the ease with which they've been able to raise the fees. And there hasn't been any pushback. In fact, there's competition and waiting lists for people to join. So this is emblematic of the quantity of cash that is still in the economy. So when we think about demand, well, there's a lot of money sloshing around even still. And oil prices are exceptionally high. The consumer is still spending, but they are definitely running down their savings, and credit card use is increasing. Ultimately, people will then have to stop with the credit card use, but the advent of the buy now, pay later phenomenon is probably going to elongate this particular cycle, because that suggests that with interest-free periods of anything between a year, 18 months, or even 2 years, it means that over the last 6 months, there's been a lot of debt taken out, and repayments on it, or the repayment of it, isn't due until 2023 or maybe even 2024. So that's a lot of spending that's being pulled forward from the future into today. And it's contributing to this difficulty that the Federal Reserve has, that they want to try and quell this demand. And they're doing that by trying to attack the wealth effect, which is why they keep saying that they want, and we have numerous Fed governors talking about the need to reduce financial asset prices. So this is what we're seeing on Wall Street. Now, when we think about oil, I think it's exceptionally finely balanced. On the one hand, we have the lack of supply. So we have this war going on in Ukraine, and the susceptibility of Europe to Russia turning off the taps is being, I think, revealed in a new way by the day. For example, Russia and supplies Europe with 70% of its diesel. There are numerous refineries in Eastern Europe that have direct pipelines to Russian oil. So if Europe stops getting oil from Russia, well, those refineries are going to close and there won't be any refined products in a broad swathe of Eastern Europe. So, and that translates all the way through into Berlin, or east of Berlin. So these are significant challenges. And there's a lot of demand and there's supply and elasticity. So that's helping to support the price. On the other side of the equation, we have slowing global growth and the continually tightening financial conditions. And one would have to anticipate that that is going to cut into demand eventually. But we're still in this rangy environment where we did break the sequence of lower rally highs yesterday, and now it's the price is coming back down, and there is a sequence of higher reaction lows. So we still have an upward bias overall, and for the moment at least, we'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to continued upside, even though we've had two down days now. $100 is an awfully big psychological level in oil, and high energy prices are one of the primary contributing factors in this difficult global environment. Now, when we think about the what's going on in the UK, where you have a very interest rate sensitive mortgage market and loan market, you have energy that is increasingly expensive because of the weakness of the currency. And the pound gave up just about all of the pop on the upside yesterday. So, encountering resistance around 1.25 and still very much under pressure. This is clearly highlighting where the pressure release valve is from inflation. The Bank of England is inhibited from raising rates aggressively. They very much understand that if they were to raise rates aggressively, the pain that would inflict on regular consumers because of their exposure to floating rate debt would greatly exceed the pain from higher food prices. So it's a necessary evil in that regard, that they're not going to be able to raise rates aggressively. The pound will be devalued. The pressure will be borne by consumers in food prices because it's the lesser of two major evils. So this is obviously problematic. Now, when we think about major food producers in the UK, well, Associated British Foods has been trending downwards now for 7 years, and it steadied somewhat from the 1500p level, but not in a sufficiently dynamic manner to question that this isn't still a downtrend overall. Then we have Tate & Lyle, which is less about sugar these days than it is about food ingredients. And it pulled back exceptionally violently 3 weeks ago, and now it's right at the lower side of the range. So there's not a lot of places that UK investors can benefit from rising food prices, but where they can certainly benefit is from rising energy prices. So the domestic energy sector continues to do well. And Equinor, in particular in Norway, is surging higher. So we're seeing definitely the energy sector offering a lot of support. And Shell now is coming back up into that overhead trading range from 2017 through 2019. And then the dividends have obviously contracted, but still around the 3.4% level. Now, where we have really outstanding dividends is in Petrobras in Brazil. So they've just issued a return of capital, then a regular cash dividend, and then an interest on their capital because interest rates in Brazil are so high. So there's going to be a gross dividend of about 35% and an indicated yield for the year outside of the special ones of about nearly 20%. And the share is still going sideways, but right at the upper side of the space formation right now. These kinds of yields really aren't available anywhere else. What I find particularly interesting is that despite the fact that that Norway, for example, is exporting record quantities of natural gas, the currency is going down. This is the dollar rising against it. Indonesia reported a record surplus and some of the best trading conditions the country's ever had, and the rupiah is devaluing as well, with the dollar breaking out against it. Now, Brazil has got some of the highest interest rates in the world, and they are beginning to gain traction. So, the rupiah, excuse me, the real has now bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average, and so far at least it is holding this breakout. So this is, I think, one of the better contenders for a stronger currency internationally. As we think about where this is going, we're still in this inflationary environment. And there are certainly efforts underway to try and get control of it. One of the challenges is that investors have been conditioned to buy the dip. So we had, for example, the jump on Taiwan Semiconductor a couple of days ago, and then it's starting to come back down in here today. Then everybody is looking at these 1,000-day moving averages and thinking that they have historically offered support. Apple is still a long way from that 1,000-day moving average. And it does look like it is going to completely unwind that overbought condition. And it's exactly the same thing for Microsoft. Now, Amazon has had much greater selling pressure and is way below its 1,000-day moving average and still falling. So it's testing now the upper side of that underlying range before the pandemic and the psychological 2,000 level. But it's going to have to bounce and do so in an emphatic fashion to confirm near-term support, because over the medium term, this looks like a completed type 3 top formation with a lengthy range, multiple failed upside breaks, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, a period of ranging in the region of the 200-day moving average, but mostly below it, and then an additional breakdown. So we're looking at an increasing number of completed top formations. Then there are other companies where people have really been conditioned to buy the dip, and Hermes is one of those. It has come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average on several occasions over the last 20 years, and every one of those has been a buying opportunity. But the company is now trading on a price to sales ratio of 12. Now, they have generous margins. It's a very high margin, desirable business, and it accelerated in a very profound way in 2020 and 2021. And this has been a very substantial pullback. It wouldn't be at all surprising to see Hermes go sideways for a lengthy period of time. And the days of, or the go-go days of the share going from 100 euro in 2010 to 1600 in 2021 are probably over. And this is going to be a difficulty because the kinds of shares that people have been buying habitually are losing uptrend consistency. We're seeing a lot more demand for resources. And then, of course, there's the real potential that we're going to see price controls introduced. Now, price controls are exactly the same suite of policies that were introduced in the 1970s. At its most fundamental, it's a transition from markets controlling prices to politicians controlling prices, and it represents a much greater role for politics in price setting. So obviously that's not welcome from the perspective of investors. But the most important thing is price controls work. They do bring down commodity prices, and they do it in an artificial way, but they do succeed in doing that. And eventually, though, the solution becomes exceptionally expensive, and it has to be abandoned. And then all the pent-up inflation ramps higher again. And that's why in the 1970s we had a lot of boom and bust and very short cycles. Now, when we think about the yield curve spread, well, it's back down to 21 basis points. But the more important point is that the low is much, or the, excuse me, the high is much lower than the highs we've seen in previous cycles. So this supports the idea that we're going to have a much more volatile environment. What I find especially interesting is that the peak that we saw in the yield curve spread is virtually identical to where it peaked in 76, and that we've seen plenty of times between 1976 and the 1980s when we had low peaks and we had boom and bust cycles coming every 3 or 4 years. I suspect that we're going to see short, sharp cycles. So we're getting certainly the downswing right now and some very significant trend inconsistency. When the market sees clearly that inflation has begun to come down and central banks begin to relent from tightening, well, then we can anticipate that there will be a very strong, powerful rebound, and inflationary pressures will also likely ramp higher from there. So then it's also likely that price controls are going to become much more fashionable. And gold prices are still really very steady. The inability of central banks to raise rates a lot is going to, I think, copper fasten the argument that we're going to have negative real rates for the lengthy medium term. And that's generally a positive outlook for gold. Now, it really needs to pull up and out of this short-term range, but at least it is finding support right now in the region of the $1,800 level. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.